Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Chris Ryan. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we welcome Dr. Brad Haverkos to discuss evolving management and treatment adherence strategies in cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. Dr. Haverkos is an associate professor of medicine hematology at the University of Colorado Anschutz in Aurora. In the exclusive interview, Dr. Haverkos outlined treatment approaches across early stage and advanced cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, identified strategies for identifying disease progression in this patient population, and spoke about how clinicians manage mogamulizumab-associated rash. Thank you so much, Dr. Haverkos, for joining us today to discuss some of the evolving strategies and treatments with cutaneous T-cell lymphoma landscape. So for newly diagnosed patients, how is treatment generally approached in terms of standard of care for those patients in the treatment-naive setting?
Cutaneous T-cell lymphoma is approached with a stage-based approach. So the first step in figuring out what the best treatment is to really stage the patient appropriately, looking at their skin and get an assessment of their skin burden of disease, and then assessing if they have lymph node involvement, perhaps visceral involvement, which is exceptionally rare, or blood involvement. And those factors really help us decide how best to treat the patient. And based on that composite score, you get a stage. For the vast majority of patients present with early stage disease with skin only involvement. And so skin only early stage patients, especially those with really what we classify as like patch stage disease, very flat lesions, have an excellent prognosis, excellent outcomes in general, and really for the most part live a normal life expectancy, but their disease is generally bothersome to them and affects their quality of life. And so we generally approach those early stage patients, again, with just sort of flat lesions, with a skin-directed approach, typically with narrowband UVB light therapy or phototherapy is our sort of mainstay of therapy and go-to therapy for the vast majority of patients. For the patients that present with more advanced stage disease, most people would classify advanced stage disease as having these lesions that we call tumors. For the patients with tumors or with blood involvement, and sometimes with lymph node involvement or organ involvement, which is, again, exceptionally rare, we approach those patients with a different, usually with systemic therapy, plus minus some skin adjunct therapy.
For those patients who are undergoing treatment, what are some of the signs that you look for in terms of progression and patients who, might be moving on to that next line of therapy?
Again, patients that we typically present with early stage disease, we often treat them with narrowband UVB light or phototherapy. A portion of them will progress and need systemic therapies or progress, be recalcitrant to skin-directed therapies. And so once we kind of denote them or define them as recalcitrant to having skin-directed therapy, we think about moving on to the systemic therapies or if they have maybe an inadequate response to skin-directed therapy, we'd add some sort of adjunct from a systemic therapy. Typically, if patients just have skin-only disease, classified as early-stage disease, defined as either patches or plaques, we often treat them with a drug called Targretin, which is a vitamin A derivative, a retinoid, similar to like Accutane, other things people are more familiar with. Sometimes we think about adding other drugs like interferon. The old formulation of interferon, Pegasus, is no longer available. We use now more often using a drug called Besremi. Those are some kind of things that we think about early on for those patients with really skin-only disease, maybe an adjunct therapy to the skin-directed therapy. When you move to more of our advanced stage disease, like the patients with tumor involvement, so more raised lesions or sort of ulcerative plaque-like lesions, we think about some of our arguably maybe more effective systemic therapies or more potent systemic therapies, the sort of HDAC inhibitors like romidepsin or pralatrexate. Those are certainly drugs that we often think about in that space. It is a very sort of nuanced approach, taking a number of different factors into play, not just the stage, but also logistics and comorbidities and other factors that are at play. The other factor that influences our choice of systemic therapy, or one of the factors that influences our choice of systemic therapy, is blood involvement, and certainly other histologic features that can also be a factor, with something called large cell transformation. Also something, if they're CD30 positive or not, that may influence our decision to use a drug like brentuximab. But for patients with blood involvement, we really tend to think about a drug like called mogamulizumab. We've learned really over the years that different drugs respond in different compartments better and respond in different disease settings better. And it's really allowed us to approach patients in a much more individualized approach, you know, like I said, based on some of the histologic features that may influence a decision to go one direction. Or if, for example, they have blood involvement, then we tend to really steer towards a drug like mogamulizumab. There are different degrees of blood involvement. And certainly if you have low burden of blood involvement, we still think about things like photopheresis or interferon, even targretin, or potentially all three as good options for these patients. But certainly patients with higher degree of blood burden, ones that we classify as B2 disease or Sézary, NCCN and others certainly recommend mogamulizumab as really the go-to option. That's certainly my approach as well.
I wanted to follow up a little bit more about mogamulizumab. For patients who are ultimately prescribed this agent, what do you tell them about in terms of what to expect in terms of maybe time to response and duration of response and, you know, how long they might be on this therapy potentially?
In general, it's a very well-tolerated therapy, so it's nice. I have patients in their 90s that get the drug and do very well on the drug with very minimal side effects. You know, the most common side effects that we really see are relatively mild things like fatigue and some rare infusion reactions and some headaches here and there. But the side effect that is most challenging is the rash that can ensue from the mogamulizumab itself, which is tough in a disease that presents as a rash to have a drug that causes rash. But frankly, many of the drugs that we use often do bring out some degree of rash, at least early on in therapy. And so we often try to push through therapy when they have that kind of rash in the early onset. But in terms of response, the responses, which I had mentioned a little bit before, are responses to different drugs vary based on compartment response. So if you're to look at the MAVERICK study, it's a randomized study comparing mogamulizumab to vorinostat. Overall, while using pretty tight criteria to define response, the response with mogamulizumab was around 30%. But if you break it down by compartment response and think about and look at patients with blood response versus skin response and lymph node response, you see very high responses in the blood, you know, right around 70% and 40% in the skin and 20% in lymph nodes. And then we also see the time to response is better in blood and, you know, then follows by skin and then lymph nodes. So just demonstrating that mogamulizumab is most effective in patients with blood involvement. You know, we see very early, quick responses in the blood within weeks to month. And it takes longer for that skin response to happen. You know, around 3 months is the median time to response in skin. But if you look at the overall responses, if you look at response by compartment, it's essentially 70% in blood, 40% in skin, and around 20% in lymph nodes. And so again, you know, patients with Sézary syndrome, it's really our go-to drug. And we often will see very high responses in the blood. And then the skin, if we stick with it, will eventually tends to get better. It's not a drug that we tend to think about in patients with sort of lymph node involvement or organ involvement in that rare setting, or in the patients with large cell transformation were excluded from the trial. So those are populations that we tend to not think the drug is maybe best for. Some of these populations and some of these challenging patients, you know, there's sort of growing data to think about using mogamulizumab in combination with other therapies that may be, you know, and that's a theme all throughout cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, not just with mogamulizumab, but with other therapies as well, where we often think about combining therapies because of that sort of mixed responses that we get in, you know, blood versus skin versus lymph nodes. And for that reason, we're still studying and still learning how best to combine mogamulizumab, but a number of ongoing studies looking at combinations and some published data showing that maybe the duration of response is a little bit longer in those patients, which certainly makes sense with what we see clinically.
In terms of, you know, obviously managing the rash and, you know, differentiating between the rash and potential progression, what strategies are there for that? And, you know, how do medical oncologists and dermatologists kind of work in tandem to help manage and, you know, identify potential progression versus toxicity?
The MOGA-associated rash is super challenging to deal with and is a common issue that we run into. And the rash can happen early. It can happen later after, you know, many months of therapy. it can look almost identical or identical to their cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. So just on clinical grounds alone, it's really impossible to distinguish a MOGA rash from a, you know, progression of disease. And so, you know, we often will get skin biopsies to help try to sort that out and help distinguish. Granted, even with a skin biopsy, it sometimes can be very challenging to decipher what is MOGA rash versus what is progression. But certainly a skin biopsy is our best tool to help us understand the etiology of the rash. And, you know, in terms of treatment of MOGA rash, I think there's lots of different opinions out there and there's lots of different approaches. Certainly none of us know the absolute right way to approach it. I think people, you know, approach MOGA rash, you know, in general, there are some studies to suggest that patients that have a MOGA rash actually are ones that respond better. So we really try not to make it a dose limiting toxicity. And if there's a way to treat through, you know, we certainly try to do that. You know, in my clinic, we've done things like steroids to treat MOGA rash, that topical and systemic steroids. We've done, you know, utilized things like oral methotrexate. Certainly there are other approaches as well that people are utilizing besides prednisone and methotrexate and different things that I think we'll learn as time goes on.
In terms of the next steps of research and, you know, where treatment may go for these patients, you know, what are you looking at in terms of the future and in terms of what this treatment space might look like?
I think what I'm most excited about and look forward to in the years ahead are being able to have combination studies, you know, safe, well-tolerated combination therapies that can get quicker responses in the skin. Frankly, you know, people come in with complaints of pruritus or itching and skin lesions. And often most of our drugs take 3 months to work in the skin. You know, one of our, I think, goals moving forward is if we can find ways to get faster relief to our patients, you know, improvement in their symptom burden, improvement in their skin lesions. And my suspicion is that's going to come by likely probably some combination therapies and perhaps additional targeted therapies, which is something else that I'm looking forward to in the years ahead. So, you know, more strategic targeting of cutaneous T-cell lymphoma.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.